That's a long gospel. I'm trying to remember what it was about. Water? Thanks. Can you all help me for a second? And anybody, any other kid that wants to help me for a second, you can go back to your chair if you want. I just need you for 1 second. I need you to put down your beads for a minute. I know I'm interrupting a very important thing that you're doing, but I want to tell you a story. Can you help me? So when I was a kid growing up and I would go to Sunday school, only it wasn't Sunday school because I went to a Catholic school, and so we had education, religious education within school. We were told that in our chairs, and our chairs were about this size or smaller, that we had to make room on our seats for our guardian angels. So can you do me a favor? Okay, we're going to pretend that I asked you to put down the stuff. Now, here's what I want you to do. Look, I was told I had to make room for a guardian angel on my chair. Can you all make room for a guardian angel? Yes. Let's pretend you're sharing your chair with somebody. Can you do that? You all can do it too, you know. That's it. Wiggle yourself over. That's it. Is it very comfortable? How many of you feel like you could fall off your chair? Right? And do you ever wonder if it's... Oh, and you got a chair. That's called cheating. Have you ever wondered why your angel didn't have wings? I just figured it didn't watch It's a Wonderful Life. But besides that, is it hard to sit on one side of your chair? Can you imagine going through a whole day sitting on one side of your chair? What do you have to do so you don't fall off? Balance. Now try this. Close your eyes. Close your eyes and do it. Okay, that was just for my entertainment. Thank you for your help. You can go back doing what you're doing. But here's the deal. How many of you came from a tradition where you heard about guardian angels? How about spirit guides? How about patron saints? How many of you have relics, things that you carry in your pocket, rosary beads, prayer beads, things to guide you and give you support during your day? It doesn't sound so crazy now, does it? I know. You thought Claire was a bit daft, but we all come from traditions where we sort of have these things that remind us of what we call liminal space. I know, it's a fancy theological word. You're impressed, right? Yeah, now I have to go look and see what it means. Do you know what liminal space means? Okay, try this. We just came off of St. Patrick's Day. How many of you have heard of a thin space? How about a veil? Think Harry Potter, the veil between, no? Oh, wow. This is going to be a long sermon, you guys. The liminal space is that in-between space. It's sort of that threshold, that space between here and that spiritual world. That space that maybe we cross into if we've ever had a mystical experience with the divine. That space that in a moment's time, when you're not even sure it's happened, you are aware of something other than yourself, something that transforms you in that space. Perhaps it's a chant or a hymn, or it's during a funeral service, a memorial service, or you've been with someone who's getting ready to pass over. And there's this space where for a moment you could swear you could see from one side to the other. Now, does that sound a little familiar? And perhaps you've heard this phrase, being in this world but not of it. What does that mean? It's okay, I'm going to tell you. There is an author, Eric Weiner, and what he says of thin places is this. They are very, very deep. They are locales where the distance between heaven and earth collapses, and we're able to catch a glimpse of the divine or the transcendent, or as I like to think of it, the infinite whatever. He goes on to say that thin spaces does not necessarily lead to anything as grandiose as a spiritual breakthrough, whatever that means. But it does disorient us. It confuses. We lose our bearings and find new ones, or perhaps not. Either way, we are jolted out of the way we were seeing the world the moment before. Okay, are you starting to catch on now? Now it's starting to make a little more sense. Liminal, that's the fancy term. It's not that fancy, now that you know what it means. Jesus lived in this space most of the time. He lived in this space between the here and now, between being in the world and being of the world. And that's the kind of space that allowed him to step beyond his own sort of concrete Jewish tradition to a space where he could meet the Samaritan woman at the well. Now, let me give you a reason why that was so important. Somebody asked this morning, weren't Samaritans from the same heritage as the Jews? Absolutely they were. And what we came up with is, who makes the worst possible enemies in your life? Family. Yes, family. And so you have these two groups, Jews and Samaritans, who really came from the same place. And one of their forefathers was Jacob. Jacob, whose name then became Israel and became the father of the 12 tribes of Israel. Sound familiar? Humor me. Mm-hmm. And what happened was, at some point in history, those tribes got angry with each other. And so you had a northern tribe and a southern tribe, and the southern tribe became Judah, where Jerusalem was, and that's where God hung out as far as they were concerned. Except the northern tribe, they were in Israel, and they thought that Jehovah, Yahweh, God hung out with them up near Jacob's well. So you can see they got into a little conflict about who God liked better. But at this point in the history, in this point of the history of Jerusalem and the Jews, Samaritans and Jews were not getting along. So for Jesus to kind of pull aside, go over to a well, talk to a woman unaccompanied, and a Samaritan at that, was a big deal. It's no wonder he told his disciples to go someplace else, right? He didn't really want to be bothered with whatever their reaction would be, because they were a little judgmental, just a little bit. But he met this woman in a liminal space. He met her in a space between what was conventional and traditional for his people and hers, between that and the space that was transformational. He met her differently than he was supposed to, different from what is expected and conformative to that what was sacred, and as such became an encounter with the divine. Richard Rohr likes to say, then when you are at the center of something, you usually confuse the essentials with the non-essentials. How many of you get involved with something so intensely that you confuse the essentials with the non-essentials? I don't, so I don't understand that concept. That was not funny. But we do. We tend to get tied down by trivia. We get tied down by loyalty tests and job security. And not much truth can happen there, can it? If we are too bogged down or distracted by the non-essentials. Jesus was not at the center, but rather he was on the edge of his culture, of his system, and what is expected of him. Having a guardian angel as a child put you on the edge of your seat, as it were, and it reminded you of a space that was greater than just the space you were taking up. I didn't have that concept when I was that age. I was wondering why she wasn't flying and needed to sit next to me. But really, that's what the idea was, that there was a space greater than the one we were in. And this brings us to our fourth core principle. You know those eight principles that we're doing? This brings us to our fourth core principle. Practical truth is more likely found at the bottom and the edges than at the top or the center of most groups, institutions, and cultures. I would also suggest that it is found on the margins of our world, on the margins of our experiences and our society at large. Does that make sense to you? To take your position on the spiritual edge of things is to learn how to move safely in and out, back and forth, across, and to return. It is a prophetic position, not a rebellious or antisocial one. When you live on the edge of anything with respect and honor, and that's what is crucial, you are in a very auspicious and advantageous position. You are free from its central seductions, but you are also free to hear its core message in a new and creative way. There was a video posted perfectly last night on Facebook. Perfectly. I showed it to some of you this morning simply because I couldn't resist, but I brought it with me and you can see it downstairs. And so let me tell you what this video was. This boy of about 8 years old gets his backpack out and starts packing it up with Twinkies and apple juice. How many of you have had Twinkies and apple juice? Maybe not together. Don't lie, you've all had Twinkies and you know it. In fact, if you bought them 30 years ago, they're still on your shelf. So he packs up his knapsack with Twinkies and apple juice, and his mother says, "Where are you going?" And he goes, "I'm going to find God." And so this 8-year-old takes his backpack, little boy, glasses, goes out. You can tell they're city folk because he gets on the subway without an adult, and that's totally beside the point, but as a parent, I'm freaking out. So he gets on the subway, and he travels, and he travels, and he travels all over the city, and finally you see him coming to a park, and he goes, phew, and he sits down on a bench next to a woman who clearly is homeless. She is layered with lots of clothing, kind of sitting there like this, suspicious of him when he sits down. And he, without a thought, opens up his backpack, pulls out a package of Twinkies, opens it up, goes. She looks at him with surprise, takes the Twinkie, bites it, and you can just see the thrill. And they start to giggle. And I'm sure there's some conversation that's going on. We have music and giggles to watch. And they're having a grand old time. And then he takes out his apple juice and gives her an apple juice. And they opened it and they cheer one another. And his mother had told him, when you leave, remember, be back at 6 o'clock. It's dinner time. So after this goes on for a little while, and we were all delighted, we see him check his watch and he says, "I have to go. I have an appointment." And he gets up and she gets up and they do great big hugs and the smile on her face is big enough to melt a glacier. I mean, it's stunning. So he goes back home, he walks in the house, and his mother says, "So, did you find him?" And the boy goes, "Mom, God is a woman and she has the most beautiful smile I've ever seen." And then we go back to the woman who is walking down the street, sits on the ground next to another woman who has a sign, "Hungry, anything helps." And the woman is still beaming, and her friend says, "Why are you so happy?" And she goes, "I just had Twinkies in the park with God. He's a lot younger than I expected." It's this beautiful moment or moments of that liminality, that space of sacredness, where both of them find the divine in each one because they allow themselves to step out of whatever was normative and instead find God in that space. It was so beautiful. It was Jesus walking to the well and finding God in the face of this woman, and she obviously did the same. We are constantly, day in and day out, being invited into this liminal space, being invited to leave behind the conventions and the systems that bog us down and bog our other people down, and to come to a place of living between. I'm going to give you one more example. I, ironically, purchased a house on the edge. It's one of those neighborhoods where across the street from us is this real nouveau kind of place that has whiskey, waffles, and coffee. And that's the right off order, just so you're sure. And it's great, and people come from all over the city to be there. And half a block away is Springs Rescue Mission. And right there, on the edge of that neighborhood, is the trailhead to the Greenway Trail. Trails that people are on from all over the city, because it starts all the way down by Goodwill, and it goes all the way up to the Air Force Academy. Everybody uses this trail. It's also a major thoroughfare for the homeless. I took my Great Dane out there the other day. Or she took me out there the other day. And we're walking, and something very unexpected happened. There were a number of men on bicycles who were homeless, and they were riding. That's not unusual. About a quarter mile up the trail, there's a gentleman on his bike who has like an old baby carrier that he's using to haul his possessions. Another man goes by us, meets up with him, and they go off together. As he goes forward, he drops his coat. He doesn't know it. A third man behind me comes up the trail, picks up speed, and starts calling to them. They don't know that he's dropped his coat. This homeless man is calling to him to say, "You've dropped something." He picks the coat up, and as he does, you see all these coins fall from the pocket. At which point he bends over, starts picking up the coins one by one, putting them back in the pocket to hand to the man who dropped the coat. Part of me was simply in awe of this beautiful sight. Part of me was ashamed that I thought it couldn't happen. But in this moment, in this space where nobody was watching them, this man took a coat, put the coins back, which he clearly needed, called to the other gentleman and said, "You dropped this." And then they all went their separate ways. This sacred liminal space right here on the edge of town, in a space where few of us would choose to go, was happening right there. These men who are not bogged down by convention or distraction, but simply answered the call to participate in a divine action with one another simply because they did. It was beautiful. But it's dangerous. And let me tell you why this is dangerous. Practical truth is more likely found at the bottom and the edges than at the top or the center of most groups, institutions, and cultures. And I would also suggest on the margins of our world and our experiences and our society. So here's the problem. For us to step into this liminal space, to find the balance where we don't fall off our chair, to be able to live between this world and the next, as it were, to be in the world but not of the world, means that we have to take on the position of a prophet. The biblical prophet is always on the edge of the inside, not an outsider throwing rocks where we're judgmental. Not a comfortable insider who defends the status quo, which we call complacency, but one who lives precariously between the two perspectives, held together, the faithful insider and the critical outsider at the same time. We are talking, of course, about great names like Dietrich Bonhoeffer and Dorothy Day and Martin Luther King and Oscar Romero. And we know we're sitting in that liminal space got them, don't we? It's not a safe position to be. And yet it is one of profound discipleship, compassion, and love that asks us to be in this world, but not of it. And so as we make our way through this Lenten season, trying to figure out what it means to be Christian in the 21st century, we have to ask this one critical question. What have we gotten ourselves into? Let the people say, Amen.